Moncrief on News Talk.
Here's an example. I've given up work to pursue your dream. David Horne was a scientist who worked in the pharmaceutical sector, but he gave it all up because of his interest in Plato. He worked at translating Plato's dialogues for over a decade. He had to learn classical Greek in the process. And all that time later, it's about to be published. David, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
When in Plato's dialogues, who is Plato dialoguing with?
Well, my experience with Plato is ultimately he was dialoguing with me. And that's what held my interest in Plato throughout. He was putting questions to me. He was raising all sorts of issues. He was asking me to look at the world around me in a different way. And most directly of all, he was dialoguing with me. If you go to what's in the text itself, a big character in the dialogues is this man, Socrates, more people have heard of Socrates than have heard of Plato.
Yeah.
Socrates was the man who knew nothing, who asked questions and who showed others who thought that they knew a lot, that they in truth, like Socrates, knew nothing. And that meant something to me as well, because there was a certain appeal in being shown that although I think that I know, I thought that I knew, in fact, I didn't know. So the dialogue at two levels, how it was speaking to me, and that's what kept me at it. And then what's going on in the works themselves, these dialogues revolving around this gadfly Socrates, who appears in the dialogues in conversation with people on a huge range of topics. And he insists he knows nothing, yet he's able to explore these issues. He's able to explore issues as the nature of justice, where justice lies. How we should live our lives is the fundamental question, particularly in what we call the Socratic dialogues.
Yeah.
So
is this Plato describing the discussions that Socrates has in, you know, town squares with various people?
Most definitely on the face of it.
Yes.
He went down where the people were and spoke to them. Cicero says about Socrates that he brought philosophy down from the heavens and brought it into the homes and cities of men and made it answer questions about our lives and how we should live them.
Right.
So, yeah.
Plato's dialogues, is it really Socrates' thought rather than necessarily Plato's thought?
Or is that's a hard one, Sean. come on.
Because Socrates didn't write anything down, so we don't know if it's Plato putting his own thoughts into Socrates' mouth occasionally.
Some people would say that. I think the way I look at it is, look, Socrates was definitely the teacher. Mm. No doubt about that. And Plato was the pupil. Did Plato do no more than spout what Socrates said? I don't think that makes you much of a pupil. I think Plato did better than that. He heard what Socrates said. He imbibed it. He made it his own. And when he speaks then in the dialogues, when Socrates speaks in the dialogues, even if he may never have said exactly those words at that time, nevertheless, I think Plato is really satisfied that this is the way Socrates would have dealt with this issue. This is the way he would have tackled this issue. And in many cases, this is exactly what he said on this issue.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Now, it hasn't been translated into English for over a century. Why did you feel the need to do it again, David? Was there something missing in the previous versions of it?
No. I've no criticism of anyone else's work at all, Sean. The story, if I can just tell you a short story, it revolves around, I was at a party in Dublin. Somebody who knew me well, knew I had a lifelong interest in Plato, knew I'd lectured on Plato and on courses on Plato, came to me and said, look, what would be involved in producing a new translation of the dialogues of Plato? So this is chat at a party. I immediately thought, OK, well, I know Professor Dillon in Trinity. He could do it, but I'm not sure he'd be interested. I said, look, I can't really think of the right person, but leave it with me. And then I looked at this person at this party and I thought, hold on a minute here. He's thinking that I should take this on. Mm. And I said, look, I'm working full time to make a living. I mean, I would have to stop that and work full time on this project. I was sort of early 50s at that stage. He said, OK, well, look, leave it with me. A year later, he came back to me and he said, look, we're good to go. I've got the support in place. We'll support you. We'd like you to do the project. And I mean, as you said, this is close to 1 million words. It hasn't been done since Jowett in the 19th century. Hadn't been done at all in the 20th century. And I'm not a scholar. I'm not a classic scholar. And, you know, the philosophy I know is from Plato. But he was serious and I had a decision to make. I was 53. The question was, do I go on working for my American multinational, earning good money, very good money, with bonuses and building up a good pension, or do I stop and take on this project? And it might sound like a big decision, Sean, but look, I really didn't have to think about it. I was not going to walk away from this and look back 15 years later and say, look, I had my chance. And I walked away.
Well, there you go. We all make rash decisions at parties, but yours was a considerable commitment. Now, obviously, these conversations are from a couple of thousand years ago, but in the modern context, I'm sorry, this is radio. You have to answer this question in a minute. You know, what can the modern reader take from either what's in there or the how it's constructed itself from the Socratic method?
What struck me about it when I read it first was what was going on, which was dialogue, not dogma. Plato was a philosopher, but he was not trying to shove any of his views or any of his dogma down my throat. It was all dialogue and it was inquiry. So in the Republic, Book One, Thrasymachus is there, character in Book One of the Republic, and he's saying, really strongly, really forcefully, if you live a just life, you will lose out. Justice is for losers. That's what Thrasymachus's message is. Justice is for losers. The people who get on in the world are the unjust people who break rules left, right and centre and don't get caught. That's his view. He's allowed to express it at great length in that Book One of the Republic. And I was astonished at this, that Plato as a writer would give such voice to a man whom I knew he couldn't possibly agree with. Mm. It's a might is right doctrine is how it's normally described.
Yeah.
I wonder, would he ever stop? And eventually he does. And Socrates then enters and Socrates starts asking questions. He just asks very precise questions. And little by little, all the flaws in this man's argument begin to appear. And that's your method. Ask questions. He doesn't just put an opposing view against this other man's view. That's not the Socratic method. He asks questions. That was one aspect of what's in the dialogues. And then the other aspect of it is I'm amazed at how well Plato as the writer understood this man's perverse doctrine. He understood it philosophically. He not just emotionally, but philosophically, he understood how the doctrine was constructed. And he also understood how prevalent it was. Mm. A lot of people were thinking what this man was saying. So those two aspects are what you find in the dialogues, the Socratic method of question and answer, not argument and counter-argument. And also the ability to understand comprehensively and deeply a view with which you're not at all sympathetic.
David, I'm so sorry, David, but we've run over time now. I apologies for that. As I told you, we only had a minute at the end there. But congratulations.
Moncrief on News Talk.
The Socratic Dialogues. And David Horan there is the translator of that.